This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, October 16th, 2020, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this hour, University of Arkansas Chancellor Joseph Steinmetz delivered the State of the University address yesterday. We'll also learn more about the rules for citizen poll watchers in Arkansas, Fort Smith considers infrastructure costs for the next year, and what will the Springdale City Council look like next year? All of that and more ahead. The COVID-19 numbers in Arkansas continue to grow. Yesterday, the Arkansas Department of Health announced a new one-day high for new cases, a combined 1,278 confirmed and probable cases. Close to 1,100 of those are confirmed cases from PCR tests. Just more than 200 probable cases come from antigen tests. And the Arkansas Department of Health is reporting 11 more deaths. Hospitalizations in Arkansas increased by 7. The Northwest Arkansas Healthcare Providers Report from early last evening lists 97 new cases in Benton County, 141 new cases in Washington County. That same report indicates 4 fewer patients are in COVID-19 units and hospitals in the two counties compared to the same time 24 hours earlier. And the most recent COVID-19 report from the White House indicates Arkansas last week had the second highest virus death rate per 100,000 people. Only North Dakota had a higher fatality rate. Arkansas was also 11th in new cases per 100,000 people. The report points out many of the infections are taking place between friends and families in homes and at casual social gatherings. The report urges Arkansans to limit the number of people at such gatherings, to continue to socially distance, and to wear masks. The report also cautions that a rise in cases in people 65 and over means there should be more messaging about the dangers of the virus to seniors. This is Ozarks at Large. Our weekly conversation with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics begins in about 8 minutes. Early voting begins Monday in Arkansas in advance of the November 3rd presidential election. At Northwest Arkansas polling stations and vote centers, along with a fleet of election officials and volunteer poll workers, we can also expect more poll watchers this election cycle. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, given this controversial election, poll watchers will also be watched.
The Arkansas State Board of Election Commissioners promotes fair and orderly elections through education, training, assistance, and distributing funds to counties during state-supported political general, primary, nonpartisan, judicial, and special elections. The board also monitors for election misconduct and election law violations. Chris Madison, staff attorney for the board, says election observers, or poll watchers, the official term, have certain authority.
In a polling location, you're going to have your poll workers. Those are election officials appointed by the county election commission, or if it's early voting, by the county clerk, if the county clerk is conducting early voting. You also have your voters who are present to present and vote, and then you have those that are authorized to be there. Poll watchers are one of those that can be authorized to be present.
Madison says prospective poll watchers must fill out paperwork and file it with county clerks for approval.
And the reason that it requires this form is that a poll watcher has the ability to challenge a voter's eligibility to vote.
Registered political parties and candidates are allowed to have one poll watcher per polling station. Candidates can also authorize a representative to watch for them. Also allowed are authorized representatives of a group seeking passage or defeat of a ballot measure.
If you have access to a computer, you can go to the Arkansas State Board of Election Commissioners, and on our forms tab, forms and checklists, middle way down is the poll watcher authorization form that lays out all of the rights and responsibilities and the actual form that must be completed to be a poll watcher.
Unlike poll workers, poll watchers are not required to be registered voters in places they are monitoring, Madison says, or even residents. Poll watchers, however, are constrained from simply showing up and wandering around polling stations where, until the close of elections, They are only allowed to observe voters checking in.
They should be allowed to be within earshot. As you're aware, a voter, when they present, they're required to state their name, address, and date of birth out loud when they present. And the purpose of that is so the poll watcher can overhear the name and check to make sure this person hasn't previously voted or is outside of the district.
Poll watchers are able to compare voters' intake information with online public registration data. If they witness an anomaly, they can object, triggering an investigation. Madison says poll watchers with political interests can also note missing voters to contact. Poll watchers cannot be within 6 feet of any voting machine or voting booth, talk to voters inside polling locations, or within 100 feet of polling place primary entrances. Electioneering, however, is allowed to take place outside that perimeter, Madison says.
Anytime voters are presenting in person to vote, poll watchers can be there. In fact, one of the nuanced differences is that candidates themselves can be present during early voting and, you know, basically be a poll watcher for themselves, but they cannot be a poll watcher on actual election day. That's kind of a fallout from the law where, you know, predominantly, historically, everybody voted on election day, and early voting was such a small number.
Poll watchers who represent a candidate or political party may also be present during ballot counts by machine or hand. They may also observe absentee and mail-in ballot processing to make sure they are fairly and accurately counted. Watchers may also, with permission from election officials, have the right to inspect any or all ballots during counting for errors. This election, both President Trump and son Donald Trump Jr. have issued calls to action, asking supporters to watch polls, creating, quote, an army for Trump's election security operation to countervail what they expect to be widespread voter fraud.
If you have people showing up that are interfering with voters accessing the poll or are creating a disturbance such that it's interfering with the operation of the poll, then poll supervisors are encouraged to contact local law enforcement.
Arkansas is currently a Republican stronghold. In the 2016 presidential election, slightly over 60% of voters chose Trump, with nearly 40% for Hillary Clinton. Of 75 counties, only 8 are Democratic majority, located in central and southeast Arkansas. Jennifer Price is director of elections for Washington County, where nearly 51% voted for Trump in 2016.
You know, we want to make that very clear that, you know, if someone just happens to come to the polls and, you know, expresses the thought that, well, I heard this in a debate or I heard that we should come and monitor that, they will be asked to leave because they're not authorized to be at the polling location. So we only, you know, are expecting those who are authorized poll watchers with that form signed by the county clerk. If it is not signed by the county clerk, they will also be asked to leave as well.
Price says she expects poll watchers to begin showing up this Monday, October 19th, when early voting begins, and she trusts the process.
You know, we've always been so open and honest and accessible to everyone, you know, about how the process works, that we hope that, you know, the voters in Washington County still have that faith in us to know that we will conduct elections the way they are supposed to be conducted.
Price is also aware that Arkansas is an open carry state, and certain poll watchers may carry weapons into polling locations.
The ones that would allow that. So, for instance, here at the courthouse, even though it will be a polling location, the courthouse does not allow someone to carry a weapon in. And so there are just a limited number of polling locations where that is something that would be allowed.
Price says Washington County Election Commission has undergone training in order to prepare for any situation this election cycle. Chris Madison says poll watchers should immediately report any interference they observe to their election administrators. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
We've provided a link to the State Board of Election Commissioners' authorized poll watcher registration form at ozarksatlarge.com. This week on The Pick and Post with Mike Shirky, a lost tape is found again. Mike's 1994 visit with legendary fiddler Frankie Kelly.
Frankie, thanks for coming down and joining me here on the Pick and Post. You were 9 years old, I think you told me, and you when you moved to Fayetteville and first began playing the violin.
We moved up here from Alma when I was about 8 or 9, and I started taking violin lessons.
26 years later, we get to hear again Frankie Kelly on the Pick and Post with Mike Shirky, Saturday night, beginning at 7 on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his second home office, we're going to call this, what would it be, Tilly's office east in Lamar, Arkansas, is Michael yeah. Tilly. Lamar is east of yep. Fort Smith, right?
Yeah, he could hear Johnson County, God's chosen county, I say.
Well, I'm glad you could still join us. Let's talk first about capital improvements, the city of Fort Smith, budgets in a year of COVID. It can make for some interesting discussion, can it not?
Yep. Yes, it always. When you're talking about $133 million over a five-year period for capital improvements, it always leads because everyone has their pet project they want to happen. Of course, this year, the budget for 2021, the upcoming year, is a $38 million capital improvement budget. Most of those, of course, a lot of that is on roads, overlay. And this year, that believe it or not, that was not that big of a discussion. In years past, it's been, I wouldn't say heated, but it certainly always has been pointed where, you know, we've got a certain road overlay in this neighborhood, but why not this neighborhood? This year, they seem to be in agreement. And if you look at the map, and it's hard to explain, of course, visually over radio, but they are hitting some areas, like on the north side of town, that probably need it. The other thing that they're doing, I think, that's interesting is they've taken some of the recommendations. We've talked before about the downtown truck study in terms of truck routes and truck traffic. They're going to spend some money on that. There's like a $100,000 signal modification there at 5th Street and Garrison. There will be three other intersections that are going to have some traffic signal work, and that's going to be about $750,000. So I say I'm surprised. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised because there's been such a, you know, emphasis, I should say, on doing something based on that report. Too often in Fort Smith's history, there'll be a report pulled together and nothing happens from it. But
all right, this has not been a stellar month for fans of debates. We've already lost one presidential debate. Now we're not going to have a debate between those who support and those who oppose the extension of a UAFS tax. First, let's talk about the tax. This is something that's been on the books for a while. I think, really, technically, the entire history of University of Arkansas Fort Smith, right?
Yes. When West Ark College joined the University of Arkansas system, there was a need. There had been a sales tax, a Sebastian County sales tax that had supported West Ark College. So part of the agreement was for that quarter-cent sales tax to also continue. And so voters approved that, and it went into effect January 1st, 2002, which was the same day the school became the University of Arkansas at Fort Smith. And it was set up to help fund the transition and growth of the university. And it had a 20-year sunset on it. So here we are. So January 1st, 2022, it will sunset. A recent Arkansas law gave a university the authority to extend that for another 10 years because it was set just to be a 20-year tax. So that's underway. The Friends of UAFS, they've raised over, as of the most recent report, it was around $106,000 to lobby for the tax. And it's, Kyle, it's your typical, it's your community leadership. It's like Judy McReynolds, who's head of ARC Best, is there, the Fort Smith Chamber's behind it, First National Bank of Fort Smith's behind it. The business community is all for the tax. But there is a group, Citizens Against Unfair Taxes, led by Joey McCutcheon, who've opposed it. They've not filed a recent financial filing, so I don't know how much they've raised to oppose it. But they requested a debate, and the Friends of UAFS declined to debate that issue. Those opposed to the tax essentially say, look, and rightfully so, that no other university has a countywide tax supporting it. That initial 20-year tax was to help a transition. It's done that. The tax should go away, and the university should be funded the same as any other university. Those for the tax say, we understand that, but the $6 million a year, roughly $6 million a year generates, has allowed the university to be aggressive in its expansion, allowed the university to keep tuition rates low, has allowed the university to respond better to the needs of the community, especially like business and workforce training needs. So their argument is, yeah, we may be the only one doing it, but that essentially gives the university an advantage. So those are the two arguments, but you won't hear those arguments in a debate.
Any official statement from an official spokesperson for the Friends of UFS why they would care not to debate?
Yeah, they declined, essentially said that the merits, and I'm paraphrasing, but to the merits of the tax, their argument for what it's done for the university standalone, and you know, there's no reason for a debate. They essentially said, look, the literature we have, the language we've put out supporting the debate stands by itself.
And there is now an official change for an elementary school in Fort Smith, and they don't have to really change that many letters on the side of the walls. It's going from Pike to Park. Albert Pike Elementary is now officially Park.
Yeah. Yep. Three letters and you're good.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, after several months, the Fort Smith School Board essentially just kind of ripped the Band-Aid off and decided, they voted 6-1 to rename Albert Pike Elementary Park Elementary School, and that'll begin next year, the next school year. Board member Wade Gilkey was the only one who voted against it, and he voted against it because he wanted to be the Ray Baker Elementary School, named after former mayor, late Ray Baker. Of course, just by way of reminder, this all started back. There's a recruitment committee formed at the school looking at what the school could do to better recruit faculty, have a better overall image. And one of the things they brought up was Albert Pike Elementary. And after some research, they found that Mr. Pike, who was a Confederate general, had some pretty interesting things to say about blacks in the state of Arkansas. Essentially, they needed to all be expelled from the state of Arkansas, and that the white race was the only true race and the only true race fit to govern. That was Albert Pike. And so, obviously, several folks decided that that should not be on the name of an elementary school, and that committee recommended the change to the board. Now the board did do a survey. It is interesting. Park was not among the more popular. The Ray Baker received a lot of responses. Of course, Pike, there were some that wanted to keep it Pike. There's some wanted to name it Bass Reeves after the deputy U.S. Marshal. Park went out, I think, in large part, Kyle, because it's the intersection Albert Pike and Park Avenue. So it keeps a geographic link with the school. And hey, like you said, you only have to replace three letters.
Finally, any idea what voters in Fort Smith would do if SEC officials were on the ballot in November?
Can you burn the ballot?
Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics, usually in Fort Smith, this time in Lamar in Johnson County. Michael, we'll talk to you next Friday.
All right. Go Warriors and go Hogs.
KUAF is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, presenting Ansel Adams in Our Time, a new traveling exhibition featuring 100 photographs from Adams alongside the work of contemporary photographers. Open now through January 3rd. Tickets and details available at crystalbridges.org. The 28th annual Dogwood Walk will be held Saturday, October 24th from 9 a.m. until noon at Gully Park in Fayetteville. This fundraiser includes activities and demonstrations for all ages. Proceeds to benefit Humane Society of the Ozarks Rescue and Adoption, Emergency Vet Care, Senior Citizen Pet Care, and more. 444-PETS or hsozarks.com for registration or more information. Support for KUAF comes from Westwood Gardens, offering mini and large pumpkins, ornamental squash and corn stalks, as well as mums for fall decorating. WestwoodGardens.com for more information or to place a pickup order.
This is Ozarks at Large. University of Arkansas Chancellor Joseph Steinmetz delivered his annual State of the University address yesterday. During the speech, the chancellor reflected on how the campus community has adapted amid a pandemic and how that flexibility will need to continue as faculty, staff, and students head into an uncertain time. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Typically, Chancellor Steinmetz would deliver his address to a crowd inside the Faulkner Performing Arts Center. Instead, he delivered his speech while seated in an office looking into a camera that streamed the address live over YouTube.
Well, I've had literally hundreds of Zoom, Teams, Blackboard, AT&T, and Cisco WebEx meetings over the last several months. I can say this is the first time I've delivered a speech in an almost completely empty room. I do thank our media people for being here, as well as Provost Robinson, who's here as well, for showing up. So I'm not completely alone here. If anything, this certainly gives me a greater appreciation for what our faculty and our students have been doing since March.
Steinmetz began his remarks by praising the campus community for its response to the pandemic. In the spring, the U of A pivoted to 100% online learning in 9 days. Students had to adapt to an abrupt change in instruction and living environment when the university closed student housing early. When attention turned to preparing for the fall semester, officials developed ways to deliver lectures online or in person while following health and safety precautions. They also developed isolation and quarantine spaces where students could convalesce if they contracted COVID-19.
Without a doubt, the key to the excellence of this institution is the dedicated faculty and staff and students on this campus who work together towards its betterment and its well-being. That has been made crystal clear these last several months as I think about the campus response to the pandemic. I'm extremely proud of the work our campus community has done to make this fall not just possible, but also safe and successful.
While no undertaking of this size and complexity is without its challenges, Chancellor Steinmetz says by and large, the transition was very successful and he considers it a major accomplishment. One of the lingering effects of the pandemic that still needs to be addressed is the financial impact it has had on the university.
Because of lower tax revenues related to the pandemic, the state legislature cut roughly $8.3 million from last year's budget and then reduced this year's appropriations by an additional $15.7 million. And last spring, the Board of Trustees decided not to increase tuition and fees for the fall semester. This was absolutely the right thing to do, given the financial challenges our students and their families have been facing and continue to face during this pandemic. Nevertheless, this has made it a bit more challenging to overcome the state budget cuts.
When the revenue picture improved some over the summer, the appropriations that were cut from last year's budget were restored, which Steinmetz says is a good thing. However, the budget cuts for this year remain. The chancellor says he's crossing his fingers that state revenue will continue to come in at higher than predicted levels during the spring, and that at least some of the university's current fiscal year cuts might be restored.
That said, managing the COVID crisis has still had a significant cost to our campus. These additional expenditures have ranged from issuing housing and dining credits, lost revenue from closing things, and suspending activities like the Rome Center and summer camps, canceling all of our summer events, including the Walmart shareholders meeting, fee reductions on school on summer school classes, canceling all spring athletic competition and reducing capacity at athletic events this fall, and so many, many other things that had to be either discounted, delayed, or canceled.
The U of A has also ordered 200 more computers to expand its computer loan program, so there are now 500 computers available for daily or semester-long loans. Additionally, the UA Cares program distributed thousands of dollars in emergency funds to students between March and September.
These funds were usually between $300 and $500 and helped students who were in dire need of money for the basics like rent and food. All told, not including our state cut, we estimate that we spent or lost about $22 million by the end of summer just to deal with the pandemic. This number will be higher as we tally COVID-related spending since early August and as we move forward during this pandemic.
U of A Chancellor Joseph Steinmetz says, fortunately, the full impact of COVID-19 has been offset by things like CARES Act funding. The university dispersed more than $7.7 million directly to students and has received another $7.5 million to offset COVID-related expenses on campus. Steinmetz says he hopes another CARES Act grant with funding for higher education will eventually be passed by Congress to further defray the costs of the virus. Although the future is still uncertain, plans are underway for the spring semester.
We are operating under the assumption that a vaccine for widespread use will not be available by the beginning of the spring semester. So we're looking at several options, including perhaps delaying the start of the semester a week or so, if that appears to make sense, and distributing spring break days across the entire semester rather than in a single week. As it's been for the last several months, flexibility in the spring semester will be continue to be the watchword we'll use. The availability of a vaccine, the severity of the cold and flu season, and the behavior of our community on campus and off when it comes to observing health and safety guidelines will shape our decisions.
Steinmetz is encouraging faculty to offer as many face-to-face classes as possible and is asking students to actually show up to those courses.
Face-to-face classes are an important part of the energy and the atmosphere of campus, as well as the uniqueness of both the college experience and the University of Arkansas experience. We are not an online university. We are not a remote university. It's not who we are. College isn't only a formal classroom education, it's also an experience. An experience that's enriched by contact with faculty and by contact with other students. I'm saddened that our students are largely missing this experience. I'm also saddened that the campus is missing the vitality that makes it the special place it is. Collectively, we need to find a balance between remote instruction and what we do best, which is face-to-face instruction. Both are great ways to learn and need to be part of the mix going forward. And I believe we can provide both experiences and do so in a manner that is safe for everyone.
The Chancellor's full State of the University address is available on the U of A's YouTube page. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. Data from a recent report published by the Northwest Arkansas Council shows diverse populations have increased in the region from making up less than 5% of the total population in 1990 to nearly 30% in 2019. Nowhere is that more evident than Springdale, where more than half the population of the city is now made up of non-white residents. But a person of color has yet to be elected to a city government role. That could change this election cycle as three candidates of color are running for positions on the city council. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek reached out to those candidates and their opponents, and she brings us this report.
Mayra Carrillo is running to represent Ward 1, Position 2 in the upcoming Springdale City Council elections. She's originally from Mexico City, but has lived in Springdale since 1995 and became a U.S. citizen in 2010.
And one of the reasons why I'm running is because I have seen the lack of diversity in the city council. And I tell people this story. It's the faces of COVID that we all went through, right? Where you're just kind of sitting with yourself, with your thoughts. What am I going to do with this energy that I have? And I thought, why not run for city council? Like, why not help my community inside the city council?
According to data published by the Northwest Arkansas Council this past March, the population of Springdale grew by 15% from 2010 to 2019 and is expected to increase by an additional 7% by 2024. The Hispanic population grew by nearly 3% during that same time period and is expected to grow another 3% in the next 4 years. The Marshallese population has also grown from about 5% in 2010 to nearly 7% in 2019 and is expected to near 8% in 2024. But Carrillo says the current makeup of the Springdale City Council doesn't reflect the change that's taken place in the city in the last two decades.
And the city council is just mainly men, mainly white men, two females. And if you look around the city, there's a lot more diversity than that. And a city council is supposed to represent the people in the city. And I don't think they're doing that so well.
Carrillo, who works in human resources, believes a diverse city council can create a more comfortable and inviting space to get more residents involved in the city's decision-making process.
When I go into a clinic and I see someone that speaks my language, I know I will be heard. I know someone will understand what I need done. So when you're speaking about someone that represents a city, and then you see them, A, as immigrant like myself, a woman, then you're like, oh, okay, so she can understand me, or he, or whoever, but it feels like there's a more of a connection.
Carrillo says the city council also had an opportunity to express its support for the Marshallese and Latino communities during the height of the COVID-19 outbreak in Northwest Arkansas this spring and summer by issuing a mask mandate, but chose to go with the resolution instead. Both groups have been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic.
The Latino and the Marshallese community is big here. So this is an opportunity to take care of your people.
Diversity is only one part of Carrillo's campaign. She says she also wants to improve infrastructure in the city, especially sidewalks.
Anytime I talk to someone, is like, can we work on these sidewalks? Springdale is a big city, and a lot of the neighborhoods do have sidewalks, but they do not connect you to a different place. People should be able to walk safely, either to work because their car doesn't work, or maybe they don't even have a car, or to the store that might be a couple blocks away.
Carrillo's opponent in the race for Ward 1 Position 2 is Randall Harriman.
I am running as a pro-police, pro-economy. I want to build business in Springdale. I want to attract new residents.
Harriman was born and raised in Springdale.
Lived my whole life there. I graduated Springdale High School. Went to the U of A. I've got a degree in business education. I was actually going to be a business teacher. But one thing led to another. I got into banking, and once I got in, it was hard to get out.
Harriman says he already volunteers for a number of nonprofit boards, so serving on the city council would be a continuation of his involvement in the community.
I'm currently on the NWAC Foundation Board, Business and Industry Training Foundation Board, Mayor's Prayer Breakfast Committee. I'm an ambassador for the Chamber for Springdale. Formerly was on the board of the Art Center of the Ozarks. I served there for quite a while. I'm a member of Rotary International. I serve as a deacon at church. So community service is a huge part of my life.
He believes the biggest issue facing Springdale is the city's rapid growth.
We're on the pace to become the second largest city in Arkansas very soon. With that comes the need for infrastructure. Not just roads, but we got police, fire, water, sewer, new lots, subdivisions, multifamily.
Aside from budgeting and planning for future needs, Harriman says the city should also invest in ways to keep Springdale residents from spending money in other cities. Recent sales tax revenue reports for Northwest Arkansas show that while Bentonville, Rogers, and Fayetteville all lost sales tax revenue during the pandemic, Springdale saw some growth.
The reason we have a increase is that the people stayed in Springdale and spent their tax dollars in Springdale. They didn't go to the restaurants in Bentonville because they're closed. They didn't go to the restaurants in Fayetteville or the bars in Fayetteville. They were closed. They stayed here. They bought groceries and they stayed home. And our revenue went up.
Much of the growth that's been taking place in the city is largely due to the diverse populations moving to the area. And Harriman agrees the city council should reflect that diversity. He says if he were elected, he'd look to find ways to encourage more residents from different backgrounds to get engaged in local government.
You know, I talk about this roundtable concept to bring in business owners, community leaders, to talk to them about the issues and the successes that are going on in the city right now. You know, I've been talking about an ambassador type position as well for the city, to be able to be a link in between the Marshallese, the Hispanic community, you know, because we need to hear from them and we need them to come to the table and let us know what's going on.
But Mayra Carrillo says that while white allyship is valuable, it's not the same as her lived experience as a Mexican-American woman.
Yes, you can get translators and you can get ambassadors. But if we're not part of the conversation, if we're not part of the table that gets to make all those decisions, that you're not really paying attention to us. You're not really letting us speak. You're not really listening to us.
Like Carrillo, Kevin Flores, who is running for Ward 2 Position 2, is an immigrant. Flores moved from El Salvador to the U.S. as a first grader. He says he exemplifies the modern Springdale story.
Really, what brought us here was just the influx of a lot of immigrants moving to Northwest Arkansas, the booming of the economy in the region, and just, you know, looking for a better and more stable life. And so I moved here in first grade in 1995, and I went through the entire public school system. I had a lot of people in the community invest not only in me, but in my siblings as well. While my single mother worked 14-hour jobs at a local poultry plant.
Flores says his family struggled, but they were surrounded by a community that supported them. He went on to serve 6 years in the Marine Corps before attending Fordham University in New York City and returned to Northwest Arkansas in 2016 to go to law school. Now, Flores is an attorney running for city council in the community that helped shape him.
I just want to participate in the process, and I just want to give back to the community in this very local and a very crucial level of government.
And he says there should always be room for diversity and inclusion in any organization.
I naturally bring that to the table by being 32 years old. If I'm elected, I'll be the youngest member of council. I'm also Hispanic, and I'm an immigrant too. But that being said, that's not why I'm running.
Flores says he's running because he's qualified for the position and wants to play a role in future decisions made by the city concerning issues of infrastructure and the economy. He believes the city should be planning for when it becomes home to 100,000 residents right now, not when it reaches that milestone.
I think that leads to more investment, you know, if you have the proper infrastructure in an area, which leads to more revenue for a city. And in turn, a better quality of life for everybody. And just playing catch up to the Bentonvilles and Fayettevilles and assuring that we're not left behind.
And by that, Flores means a continued investment in downtown Springdale.
The general population, in my opinion, is now starting to embrace our identity in downtown. Our downtown is got a lot of potential, a lot of room for growth.
In August, the city and the Walton-backed Runway Group broke ground on a four-story apartment complex with commercial space on the ground floor. The Downtown Springdale organization is also moving forward with its plans to establish an arts district, and the city's future includes the expansion and renovation of Luther George Park.
We just have to continue fostering this growth, and I believe just assure that it's an easy place for investment. For either investors within Springdale or outside the city.
And Flores adds, it helps to have a variety of life experiences at the city council table.
My experience within the city of Springdale is different than any member on the council. It's not better. It's not worse. It's just different. And I want to leverage on that and move us forward.
Flores is running against incumbent Rick Evans, who's been on the Springdale City Council for 22 years. Evans did not respond to our requests for an interview. Mark Fougeroos, who is running for Ward 4, Position 2, also declined our request for an interview. His opponent is Derek Van Vost, a former football and track coach for Springdale, who says he decided to run for office after the pandemic shut down his business.
But people in our city are starving. People in our city are about to start freezing, and we have people who are dying in mass numbers, and it's not even, nobody even cares. And then when I started looking into it, I realized that our leaders didn't represent our city. They did, by first glance, okay? So then I started watching city council meetings, and I realized, like, those guys are so far away. Now, I'm not going at them, but they're just so far off from everybody else.
He says there were only two options.
Either I'm going to do something about it, I'm going to shut up.
That something doesn't necessarily mean winning the seat. Van Vost says he's also using his campaign to reach out to Springdale's diverse communities, to encourage people to vote, and to find ways to help others.
To feed the community and clothe the community, which we've done so much of. I don't know if you've been following, but I've used that platform. So I knew I had until November 3rd to use my voice and my platform to get that done. And we've already done that. So I've already won.
And he sums up his platform this way.
I could talk about infrastructure all day long. I could talk about a platform. We can do that. That's not a problem. But until we start bringing people together and caring about human beings and being respectful, have common courtesy, compassion, gratitude, humanity, we can build the most beautiful city in the world. But we're not going to do anything but burn it down. You see? So until we start bringing people together, it's all for nothing.
Van Vost says the city needs to play a role in lifting up all of its residents, and that starts with having intentional conversations.
I spent so much time on getting community leaders together, right? So we're all together now, and we're working on things together, right? And so, again, I'm coming in with questions, not answers, okay? The key was to get all the community leaders together. Now the community has a voice. Whether I win or not, you have the leaders who've came together. The Latinx community, the Marshallese community, and even some of the Black leaders, you know, have come together. So now, and a lot of the white people too.
On his campaign Facebook page, Mark Fougeroos describes himself as a Christian blue-collar worker, Navy veteran, conservative, and a longtime resident of Springdale who is seeking a position on the city council to represent all law-abiding citizens. Van Vost and Fougeroos had both been running against incumbent city council member Kathy Jaycox until she dropped out of the race last month after deciding to move to a different ward this January. However, Jaycox's name will remain on the ballot, as it's already been certified, which means the election for Ward 4 Position 2 is still a three-way race. If Jaycox gets the most votes, the city council will have to fill the seat as a vacancy once she moves away. State law says if the time between the vacancy and the next general election is longer than 1 year, the council has to appoint a new member or call a special election. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
Two candidates are also running for Ward 3, Position 2. They are Jeff Watson and Tyler Smalling. Springdale is divided into four wards, each with two seats on the council. To run for a seat in a particular ward, a candidate must live there. However, all voters in the city get to vote in all the city council races, not just the voters who live within a particular ward.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Center for Arkansas Farms and Food offers educational classes and apprenticeships for small specialty crop farming. CAFF is training the next generation of Arkansas farmers to provide locally grown food. CAF is part of the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture. Application deadline is October 30th. UAFarmSchool.org for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me from her home is Rhonda Dillard, who is the underwriting director at 91.3 KUAF. We are connected via Zoom, Rhonda.
We are. Happy Friday, everyone.
And whenever you're here, whether you're in the studio or whether you're in front of your wall of CDs and guitars at your home, you're going to make someone happy because you're going to announce a winner.
We are. Today we're going to announce the winner of the KUAF and Garden IQ Organics. They are giving someone a chance to win a $100 gift certificate, and that gift certificate can be used online. It can be used in the store. The store is located at 3133 Main Street in Fayetteville. To me, it's in Johnson. It's in Johnson by the railroad tracks. I'm an old Fayettevillian, so to me it's in Johnson, Arkansas, next to the railroad tracks.
All right. Well, who is the winner of this certificate?
Okay. And drawn by the fancy computer program, the winner is Natalie Henderson of Westport. Natalie, congratulations. Said she is an educator here in Northwest Arkansas. So
well,
thanks
great.
For all you do.
Yes, thank
yes,
you very much.
Yes, member of this radio station, too, as well. So thank
right.
you, Natalie.
Thank you, Natalie, for listening. And, hey, it's been great to give something away again, Rhonda. It's been a while.
It has. It's been too long, actually.
Right.
And now that we are putting the finishing touches on this giveaway, we are now preparing for, get this, the 20th annual KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Can you believe it's 20 years we've been doing that?
I guess I can. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense if you step back and think about it. All right, so we'll learn more about that in the coming weeks.
We will indeed.
Rhonda, great to see you. Great to hear you. Let's talk again soon.
Always. We will. Thanks, everyone.
That's guitarist Johnny Abercrombie in the background, and I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz. We'll hear more from Abercrombie, as well as music from Steve Turay, Jackie Tarasin, Zoot Sims, and the Claudia Burson Trio. Tune in this Friday and Saturday here on KUAF for Shades of Jazz.
And this is 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this Friday edition of our show included Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, Zuzana Sitek, Timothy Dennis produced our show. Thanks to Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics for helping us out, as well as Rhonda Dillard, our underwriting director. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for being with us.